This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Opposition to the war in Iraq played no small part in the election of Democratic majorities in Congress last November, and the new leadership vowed to initiate a debate once they took control in January. They had hoped to start it on Monday. After considerable wrangling, most Democrats and a few Republicans signed on to a non-binding resolution that opposed the president's plan to increase troop levels in Iraq. But the debate on the Warner Level 11 resolution never happened. Republicans offered a resolution of their own, and when Democrats balked at it, Republicans demanded votes on both or neither, and so far, it's neither. On one level, this is an argument about parliamentary procedure, Senate precedent, and an entirely symbolic vote. On another, it's the first congressional challenge to the president's handling of the war, and it could have important implications, even for the elections, of 08. Republicans would like to avoid a rebuke to the president, and many would rather not vote to support a policy that's deeply unpopular. They also argue that the Warner resolution sends the wrong message to both U.S. allies and enemies and to the troops on the ground in Iraq. Later on in the program, we'll talk with one of the first passengers to fly aboard the brand new Airbus jumbo jet and what Steve Jobs had to say about digital music rights. But first, NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson joins us from here in Washington. Mara, nice to have you on the program, as always.
Nice to be here, Neil.
And we welcome listeners' questions as well. If you're wondering about why the Senate debate hasn't happened or what you would like to have happen, give us a call. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. And Mara, Democrats have control of the Senate. Why can't they have a debate?
Well, because as majority leaders in the past have said, we're in the majority, but we don't really run the place, or sometimes it doesn't feel that way. Just being in the majority in the Senate isn't enough. You need 60 votes to pass anything. And that is the brick wall that Democrats ran into this week. They worked very hard to craft something that could get a majority, and they thought they had it with the Warner-Biden-Levin amendment. They basically melded their own Democratic vote of no confidence in the president's policy with a Republican one, with John Warner's, to get to a majority. But you need 60, and the Republicans did them one better. They came up with a resolution that probably will get 60 votes, where Warner-Levin might not. And that's what we're fighting about. Which of these resolutions is going to come to the floor? The Republicans say they want both of them. The Democrats only want one, the one that would voice disapproval of the president's policy. The other one, the Gregg Amendment that Republicans want, that one would essentially say that Congress should not defund the war. And that's likely to get a lot of Democratic votes.
Mm-hmm. So the 60-vote level, the so-called supermajority, that is the level required to cut off debate.
Yes. And so it, in effect, becomes the number of votes you need to pass anything in the Senate, because the minority has a lot of power.
And not like the House of Representatives. And we may hear more about that next week when the House of Representatives debates a non-binding resolution of its own next week. But John Warner of Virginia, the former chairman of the Armed Services Committee, former Navy Secretary, distinguished Republican, co-sponsor of this bipartisan resolution, yet he ended up voting against debating it.
That's right, because he is sticking with his party. The Republicans only lost two votes on this procedural motion. John Warner thinks it's fair to have both resolutions debated. He'll vote for his own when it comes up, of course. But this was an important test of the minority. The most important test of the minority is, can they stick together and block things and use their power as the minority effectively? Harry Reid used to be the minority leader in the Senate, and he was pretty good at it. And Mitch McConnell is really good at it.
Uh-huh. And also thereby a test of the new majority leader, Harry Reid.
That's right. There were negotiations. Originally, the Republicans wanted many alternate resolutions to come to the floor. Finally, they said, OK, we'll give you a vote on Warner if you give us a vote on just one of ours, this Gregg Amendment, which would basically say that funding should not be cut off for the troops.
Why don't the Democrats not want to vote on the Gregg resolution? Nobody's in favor of cutting off funds for the troops.
Oh, well, that's actually not true, although many Democrats would vote for it. There are some Democrats who feel that the power of the purse is a very important prerogative of Congress's. They don't want to kind of deny it in advance, because maybe that's where Congress is going to be heading in all this. There are Senate Democrats who believe that funding should be cut. Russ Feingold is planning to introduce legislation doing just that. And there are some Democrats who think, A, it should be cut, but B, they don't want to close off that option in advance. The other thing they don't want, and this was clearly the Republicans' intent, they don't want to be gotten on the record saying we don't want to cut funding and then later vote for cutting off funding down the road, because then they'll be accused of being against cutting funding before they were for it.
I see the old trap there. Similarly, yep. A part of the reason for the Democratic, the Warner Levin and the Democrats is to put Republicans on the record. Are you for or against?
Absolutely. And that that resolution probably would have gotten a majority. There would have been a vote of no confidence in the president's policy. Now, it would have been a non-binding resolution. It might not have crossed the 60-vote threshold, but the White House and the Republicans were working very hard not to let that come up, although in the end, they decided to make a deal. Fine, we'll let you vote on Warner if you let us vote on Gregg. And that's kind of where it stands. Now, will they finally come to some agreement? Very possibly. If not, at least we got a little dress rehearsal of an Iraq debate in the fight over these procedural motions.
But as far as the White House is concerned, no vote is a victory for them.
Correct. For now. Yes.
Okay. Let's get some listeners involved in this conversation. Mara Liasson, NPR's national political correspondent. Of course, that's her voice. You're quite familiar with that on the air. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. We're going to be joined by some of the key senators in this debate when we come back on the other side of the break. But let's see if we can get some callers in now. And this is Bob. Bob's with us from Toledo, Ohio.
Yes. Thank you.
Sure.
I'm wondering what happened to the strongly expressed Republican view of a year or so ago that the people deserve an up-down vote.
That was on judicial nominees, was it not, Mara Liasson?
Yes, of course it is. And this is kind of one of the most delicious aspects of this debate. This is called the shoe is on the other foot syndrome. And yes, of course, when the Republicans were in the majority, they did not like filibusters. Now Democrats are in the majorities and they don't like them either. Look, this is politics as usual. I mean, Republicans used to call Democrats obstructionists for not wanting an up or down vote on judges. And now Democrats are calling Republicans obstructionists for not wanting a debate on these Iraq resolutions.
Bob, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's turn now to this is Kenneth. Kenneth with us from Gainesville in Georgia.
Hey, how are you doing?
All right.
My question is, you're talking about the non-binding resolutions. If my understanding is correct, they don't really do anything. So my question is really two parts. One, why are they even bothering? And two, when are they actually going to do something besides a resolution that doesn't really have any weight behind it?
Well, I think that it's going to be a very long time before they do something that has some weight behind it. First of all, the only thing they can do is cut off funding. Congress has the power of the purse. And if they wanted to do that, they could. And a lot of Republicans have been saying to Democrats, hey, put your money where your mouth is. If you don't want this war to continue, why don't you vote to cut off funding? Well, of course, Democrats are worried about that because they think it might be politically damaging to be seen as cutting off funding for the troops. But the other thing to remember is even if the Senate was debating a binding resolution, they'd still have to come up with 67 votes to override an expected presidential veto.
A two-thirds majority.
Correct.
And so why is this such a big deal for the White House if it's a non-binding resolution? They don't have to pay any attention to it. Does either side seriously believe that if Warner Levin passed, that would affect the president's plans to send troops overseas?
Not in a practical way, but it would be a vote of no confidence, and it would be symbolically very important. It would show that the majority of the Senate, even if not 60 votes in the Senate, is against the president's policy. And Republicans have been arguing that this would undermine our effort in Iraq, and it would give comfort to the enemy. But no, it would have absolutely no practical effect. But the White House doesn't want to be have the Congress on record opposing its plan.
Mm-hmm. Kenneth, thanks very much.
Thank you, sir, very much.
All right, bye-bye. And let's see if we can get this is Skeeter. Skeeter's with us from Eugene, Oregon.
Good day, you all. Thank you for the opportunity to share ideas. I really feel like the Senate ought to get beyond the non-binding resolution aspect of it and really get down to some really serious, frank discussions about not only what we're all opposed to, and I think most Americans are opposed to this terrible genocidal war, but that how we can somehow solve it. I mean, we've gone into the China shop. We've broken it. I was always opposed to us going in there, but I feel like we've really killed a lot of people. A lot of our soldiers are dying. Of course, people support poor people in the United States who feel like they have to join the army because of cash flow and stuff like that. But, you know, how I think the Senate ought to really consider strongly its advisory role and keep in mind the power of the purse and really come up with some creative suggestions on how we could apologize to the so-called Mideast and really recognize how we helped create Saddam Hussein, how we did destroy Iran's democracy back in 1953, and admit that we really have made a lot of mistakes and figure out how we can somehow make it right and get out of there and really pay attention to the advisory role that the Senate
has. Well, Mara, that advisory role is interesting. And again, Senator McCain is among those saying the Democrats are being a little hypocritical. They want to vote against in opposition to the president's plan. At the same time, they voted overwhelmingly to endorse David Petraeus, the new commander in Iraq, the man who's the author of this plan, who's going to carry it out.
That's right. And McCain has also said, look, if you're against this, why don't you use the power the Congress has and defund it? But one of the problems, of course, is that there is no easy solutions to the mess in Iraq. You know, even the latest national intelligence estimate kind of painted this picture where it's going to be terrible and chaotic if we stay, and it's going to maybe be even worse if we go. But this is a real problem, and I don't think anybody in Congress has a good answer. But at least what the Senate Democrats are trying to do is kind of show that they have heard the electorate in general and that they are closer to public opinion on this than the president.
Mara, stay with us, if you will. When we come back from a short break, Senators Carl Levin and Susan Collins will join us, and we'll take more of your calls, of course. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. Once the parliamentary smoke and mirrors have been cleared away, is it time to have a debate about Iraq in the United States Congress? I'm Neil Cownan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Cownan in Washington. We're discussing the debate that wasn't. The Senate Republicans and Democrats have yet to reach an agreement on their disagreement over the war in Iraq. We've been talking about the politics of that debate with NPR's national political correspondent, Mara Liasson. Of course, you're welcome to join the conversation. If you have questions about the politics of Iraq in Washington, D.C. at the moment, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. Joining us now from Capitol Hill is one of the authors of the bipartisan resolution on the troop increase. Senator Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, is a member of the Armed Services Committee. And Senator Collins, nice to have you today on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. Great to join you.
And you were not only a sponsor of the Warner-Levin resolution, as it came to be known, but one of the two Republicans who said, yes, we should vote and go ahead and have this debate.
That's right. I feel very strongly that this is the pressing issue of our time and that the American people want us to have a debate and that they deserve to know where each senator stands on the strategy for the road ahead in Iraq.
Was it difficult to buck the party leadership on this?
Well, I have a record of doing that over the past decade. It is always hard to vote against the party leadership when they ask you to vote, particularly on a procedural vote. But I feel very strongly about this issue, and I think we should be debating it. So at the end of the day, it wasn't that hard to vote. If I had voted to extend the debate and enter into a filibuster, the result would have been that I would be voting against a resolution that I helped to write. So that didn't make sense to me.
It seemed to Senator Warner, though.
Well, Senator Warner, I can't speak for him, but I think he had made a previous commitment because it was a procedural vote. He has worked very hard on this resolution, and we're continuing to work to see if there's a way that we can move this debate forward.
It has been noted that the two Republicans who voted in favor of having the debate were yourself and the Republican senator from Minnesota, Norm, and Norm Coleman. And these are regarded, both you and he, regarded as Republicans vulnerable in the next senatorial election coming up in 2008. Is that something that played into your thoughts?
Not really, for two reasons. One is that I've always hewed to an independent line the 10 years that I've served in the Senate. And second, I've always had very strong support from the people of Maine. They expect me to be an independent voice, and that is exactly what I have been. It's sort of ironic because just recently I cast a vote on the ethics bill where I would not cut off debate because it would have killed an amendment to create an Office of Public Integrity that I felt very strongly about. Now, that was not a popular position with the press or my constituents, but I did what I thought was right because I believed that having the opportunity to offer the ethics amendment with an independent enforcement office was important. So I think that any fair review of my record would show that I do what I think is right. And sometimes that means voting with my party, and sometimes it means voting against.
Mara?
Senator Collins?
Yes.
Yes, hi, it's Mara Liasson here. I have a question about the Gregg Amendment. I'm assuming you have no problem with that coming up for a vote.
I don't have any problem with the Gregg Amendment, and indeed, in the final draft of our resolution, Senator Warner, Senator Nelson, Ben Nelson, and I took the exact language of Senator Gregg's amendment, his proposed resolution, and put it as part of our resolution. I do not support a cutoff for troops in the field, and that's what the Gregg Amendment makes clear.
Well, could you explain then why don't the Democrats just let both of them come up?
Well, there's a lot of confusion over what was and what was not offered. When I was on the Senate floor, Senator Harry Reid, the Democratic leader, said that he made an offer to allow Senator McCain's resolution, Senator Gregg's resolution, and our resolution all come up and have freestanding up and down votes on them. That seemed like a fair offer to me, but it was turned down by Senator McConnell because he wanted requirements for supermajority votes.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can get a listener into the conversation. Supermajority would have been 60 votes. Anyway, this is Eddie from Florence, North Carolina.
Hi. Senator, another person there, I don't forget the names already. I've been sitting here thinking.
That's okay.
Anyway, question. How, like, she changed her mind. She went against the group, the main group. She went against the group and made her own decision. Why don't more senators in Washington do this? And also, when I look at Congress as being, you know, like, in control of everybody on the planet in the United States, you know, they're behind everybody. But when you really slice it down and look at it for what it is, each senator have a certain group of people he got to please in a community, in a state. And if that state right overrules another state, and that senator could vote in another state that will hurt his state, mm-hmm. won't do it. And I mean, it's kind of confusing to me because I'm looking at, we got one man that runs the war, supposedly. President is supposed to be one man running the war. So why don't you guys have a debate in Congress and find out how many other people support in the Senate that support Mr. Bush and how many oppose Bush and get it over with?
Mm-hmm. Well, Senator Collins, go ahead. Let's give Senator Collins a chance to reply.
Eddie, that's exactly what I'm proposing. I think we should have a debate on the president's plan in the Senate, and each of us should go on record. I think that's important. I think it's important that we provide guidance to the president, even though I recognize he's the commander-in-chief, and I think it's important that we let the American people know where we stand. So I agree with that. As far as reflecting constituents, I feel very lucky to represent a state where people are very active, engaged. They give me their views all the time. It's also a state that tends to be very moderate, and it's a very comfortable, good fit for me.
Hmm. Eddie, thanks very much for the call.
Wait, can I say one more thing?
Okay, if you make it quick.
Quick, okay. Why don't the Senate teach American about the control that Congress really has? Because I don't think most Americans know. If you've got control of the money purse, then teach the American that that's your right given to you by the Constitution. So once you pull the purse, tighten it up, what can we say but you're doing your job?
Eddie, thanks very much for that. Appreciate it. And Senator Collins, let me ask you, it was interesting, Senator Warner, when he drafted this resolution and sponsored it, spoke eloquently about his regrets over similar conversations were not held about the war in Vietnam. It's now been a long time since the Senate debated the war in Iraq up and down, since the war began, really, since the resolution authorizing the war was approved. And I wonder, looking back, it seems like there's been a long time without a debate. Isn't it important to get past politics as usual at this point?
It really is. This is an extraordinarily difficult and important issue, and we're at a crossroads in Iraq. My views on the president's plan are shaped by a recent trip that I took to Iraq in December. It was my third trip. I came back convinced that inserting more American troops into the midst of sectarian strife in Baghdad would be a mistake. I also was convinced that we do need more troops in Anbar province in the west, where the struggle is not sectarian and the battle is against al-Qaeda. But what I would do is reallocate troops that we already have in the country and leave to the Iraqis the security in Baghdad. The Iraqis need to take action to achieve political reconciliation, to more fully integrate the Sunnis into power structures, to hold provincial elections, to pass a bill that would distribute oil revenues more equitably. And I think, ironically, that the presence of more American troops eases the pressure on the Iraqis to do what must be done.
Hmm. Let's see if we can get Pete on the line. Pete's with us from Boise, Idaho.
Yeah, hi. My question's for both senators, actually. If Democrats are really serious about ending this war, I mean, which the majority of the public is, I'm curious why they allow the media and Republicans to frame cutting funding as not supporting the troops. I mean, it drives me crazy because just because you're cutting funding, that's sending the statement that you want to end the war. I mean, Vietnam would not have ended unless we did that. And in a lot of ways, I mean, the Republicans use that wording very tricky, and they're just really smart about framing it that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really what it is. And
Senator Collins, is that an appropriate frame? Are you cutting off to cut off funds to end the war? Would that be cutting off funds for the troops?
Well, it would be, in my judgment. I want to make sure that our troops, whether it's those that are there now or those that may be sent, despite my views, have all of the equipment and support that they need. So I do equate that. I do want to say that the National Intelligence Estimate that just came out makes very clear the dire consequences of having an immediate withdrawal over the next 4 to 6 months, as some Democrats have proposed. I think I agree with the National Intelligence Estimate that would cause the dissolution of the Iraqi army, that it would invite neighboring countries like Iran to enter Iraq, and that it would cause massive civilian deaths and displacement. So I do not support that approach, and I think that's the consequence of cutting off funds.
Senator Collins, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
Your time.
Bye-bye.
Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, speaking with us from Capitol Hill. Joining us now from Capitol Hill is Senator Carl Levin, Democrat of Michigan, chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee and a co-sponsor of the resolution we've been talking about, Warner Levin. And nice to have you back on the program, Senator Levin.
Thank you, Neil.
In the end, the ranking member, Senator Warner, voted against his own. Actually, let me go back to the question we were just asking. Are Democrats allowing Republicans to frame this debate in terms of cutting off funds for troops in the field?
No, as a matter of fact, the modified Warner resolution makes it very clear explicitly that we are not going to cut off funds for troops in the field. It uses the exact same language as is in the Gregg resolve clause. That's mm-hmm. the business end of the resolution. It's taken verbatim from the Gregg resolution. But people who want to support the modified Warner or Warner 11 approach are determined to do is to have a vote on whether or not we're going to increase troops going to Iraq, and we're not going to be sidetracked by a debate over the constitutional powers of the Congress vis-a-vis the executive branch. That's what the supporters of the Gregg resolution want to do. The Gregg resolution is not just the resolve clause, which, as I indicated, is verbatim the same, supporting the funding for our troops, as is in the modified Warner resolution. It's the so-called whereas clauses that lead up to that in the Gregg resolution, which create all of these debates over the powers of the Congress compared to the powers of the president. We don't want to be distracted on this. We want this to be a vote up or down on whether or not we support additional troops going into Baghdad.
We're speaking with Senator Carl Levin, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Mara Liasson?
Senator Levin, it's Mara Liasson here. I'm wondering, when you start talking about the whereas clauses, I think some people's eyes start glazing over. But I guess what I don't understand is what would be so bad about voting for having the Gregg resolution come up for a vote for people who want to preserve the power of the Congress to fund wars. They could vote no. For people who agree with it, they could vote yes. Why would it be so bad to have it on the floor?
It changes the issue. It changes the issue from whether or not we want troops to be added to Iraq as a way of trying to maximize chances of success in Iraq, or don't we? There are many of us, the majority, who believe that adding troops into the neighborhoods of Baghdad is not going to contribute to the success of the mission in Iraq. It's going to plunge us in deeper into Iraq, and is just going to contribute to the continuing failure which we have in Iraq. There are others who believe that additional troops should be sent into Iraq, and that is a way, they believe, of pacifying Baghdad. And then they think that means it would be more likely that there would be an agreement among the politicians. On the other side, again, is us. We believe that the politicians don't need breathing space, which is what the president wants to give them, but they need pressure on them, and that the only pressure that we see that can exist on these politicians is for the open-ended commitment and the to end, and for the additional troops not to be forthcoming, because it gives them the wrong message. It tells them if we send additional troops that somehow or other their future is in our hands instead of in their hands. Now, that's the way this debate started off, mm-hmm. between two camps, some who wanted a surge, some who don't want the surge to occur for the reasons I just gave. Now someone comes along and says they want a debate not over whether we fund our troops, because we are going to fund the troops, and both the Warner resolution and the Gregg resolution resolve clause say we're going to fund the troops. It's all this preliminary stuff in the Gregg resolution, which they want to sidetrack this debate into, to have a debate over the constitutional powers. Does the Congress have the right to not fund a mission which is given to the military by the president? We don't want a debate on that.
But when you say you don't want a debate on that, that's kind of what you're accusing them of. Why not debate them both, pass Warner and defeat Gregg?
Because we'll get bogged down on a subject which is not the issue before us.
But it's not because it would be politically bad for the Democrats to have that debate.
No, the resolve clause, as I've mentioned, and if you, you know, I don't know if you want to take the time to read it so that your audience can hear it, but if you read the resolve clause in Warner, so-called Warner or Warner 11, it is precisely the same. I'm going to take 30 seconds and read it. If you, unless you
30 seconds you've got, Senator, and that's about all the time we've
okay,
got.
Well, here's what's in both Warner and Gregg, that it's the sense of the Senate Congress should not take any action that will endanger the United States military forces in the field, including the elimination or reduction of funds for troops in the field, as such action with respect to funding would undermine their safety or harm their effectiveness in pursuing their assigned missions. That language is in Warner. That language is in the resolve clause on Gregg. That's not what they want. What they want is a debate over constitutional powers, which will sidetrack this into where the whole point or the whole...
I'm afraid, Senator Levin...
ran out of time.
Cloture. Senator Carl Levin, Democrat of Michigan, speaking to us from Capitol Hill. Also, our thanks to NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson with us from Washington. We'll be back after a break. This is NPR News.